The following is a production of Different Brains. Visit us at differentbrains.org.
Hi, and welcome to Spectrumly Speaking. I'm Becca Laurie, your house autistic, as well as perhaps your favorite catalog that comes in the mail, and maybe your favorite Christmas ornament. And I am joined here by my very favorite guest host.
Hi, everybody. It's Dina Gassner here. I'm filling in for Dr. Kate Cody, who's on a bit of a hiatus. And I'm just so happy to be here with Becca, and especially with Kelly, our new guest, because Kelly and I were both scheduled to present at the same conference. We have tons of food issues in our family, and I was so excited at the opportunity to listen to her and to pick her brain, and then my flight got canceled, so we passed in the night. Yeah. So I'm very happy to have the opportunity to meet you, in quotation marks, air quotes, and listen to you tell us something about these very important topics.
Yeah, so Kelly's joining us actually for the second time. She's a return guest to us. She was here last time talking about interoception. And actually that to me is a component of our topic today. So we got this really great email from a listener. So yes, listeners, we do read your email. And the topic that was suggested was that we talk about food revulsion. And food issues. And so because that is such a complicated issue, especially now around the holidays when we're going to visit family and having to have big meals together, it felt like a really good time for us to kind of talk about it. So we invited Kelly back to us. So I'm just going to remind everybody who Kelly is. Kelly Mahler is an occupational therapist and autism consultant supporting school-age children and young adults. She is also co-founder of Destination Friendship, an organization dedicated to providing multidisciplinary social skill groups within the community. Kelly is a professor of occupational therapy at Elizabethtown College, Elizabethtown, PA. She is actively involved in several research projects pertaining to interoception. She's an international speaker and presents frequently on topics related to the five books she has authored, including Interoception, the Eighth Sensory System. Please welcome Kelly Mahler to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Becca and Dina, for inviting me here. I'm so excited to join you today.
I am so excited to have you back. Can you give everybody just a quick little reminder of how it is you became involved in the autism community?
Sure. Well, I've been working in the autism field now for 17 years, and I got my start back in 2002 when I was an occupational therapist in the schools. And at that time, we knew very little, especially about what was once called Asperger's syndrome. And a special education director of one of the districts I was working in, he asked if I could support one of his students that had been recently diagnosed with Asperger's. So I was kind of shooting in the dark because there was very limited information available to us back then, and no one was really talking about this thing called Asperger's. So in meeting that student, his name was Doug, and he was in sixth grade, we really just struck up a collaboration because I really had no idea what to do. And when I first met him, I was just blown away by his incredible strengths, and he had so many amazing talents, and just his way of understanding the world was really, to me, I was in awe of the way that he could explain his understanding of the world. So he just made me want to work hard to help support him and make school a better place for him. And so I probably learned more from Doug than he learned from me, but the good part was that he eventually was able to feel really comfortable in his school environment, and he graduated quite a long time ago and is a happy, functioning adult. So I'm essentially, in a nutshell, very thankful for Doug and really kind of introducing me to the autism field. And slowly over time, over the last 17 years, my caseload has become more and more geared towards supporting autistic people. And I work in the schools as well as I have a caseload of adult clients.
Wow, that's a lot of work you're getting in there. But I'm glad that, as we say in our little community, autism happened to you, because people have clearly benefited so much from your commitment to our community. So getting into our topic, Kelly, I was wondering if you could give us an overview of some common issues around food that people on the autism spectrum struggle with.
Yeah, I think this is, it can be very common for a lot of autistic people in that they have what we say, a lot of people have limited diets and they are quote unquote picky eaters, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that. A lot of people with autism, they report sensitivities or very limited amounts of types of foods that they will eat. They're sensitive to textures of foods, temperatures of food. Sometimes it's the smells of the food. Sometimes it's the sound of the food being chewed in the mouth. So there's a lot of sensory sensitivities surrounding the feeding difficulties or eating difficulties experienced by autistic people. There is something called ARFID. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's like a new diagnostic term out there that's floating around. It stands for Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder. But it really is this in a nutshell, that people are just have restrictive diets and their repertoire of food that they like is very limited.
Mm-hmm. As somebody who definitely feels that way about food and struggles for all of the those reasons, I'm glad that there's at least some way of talking about it now. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, how can we recognize when a food issue has gone from just being a struggle to being a mental health problem? Or a health problem, really, too?
I think that's a really great question. And I think there's two different answers. When you're talking about a health problem, first and foremost, I think that it is good to always rule out underlying health causes of being, quote unquote, a picky eater. Because a lot of differences, like even just something as simple as reflux could cause aversion to food and not really wanting to eat because you could be in pain or have discomfort when you eat. But also having a limited diet can affect your health as well. And of course, you're not maybe getting proper nutrition. So I think this is a really important area for us to be talking about in health terms. And in mental health terms, there is a whole host of mental health difficulties that surround this topic of feeding difficulties. And there is, in a lot of my clients, there is high levels of anxiety surrounding food and surrounding eating. And that anxiety then, I think, then contributes to even greater difficulties around food and being more willing to try new things. Because when your body is in an anxious state, none of us are really available for opening up and trying things that we might not be very fond of. So it can really morph into an anxiety disorder as well as, and there, this is, getting more and more attention. We still know very little, I would say, but there is a high percentage of people with eating disorders that also have co-occurring autism. And some researchers say it could be as high as 20%. And a lot of these individuals, many who are women on the spectrum, are undiagnosed. They are not diagnosed with autism. And a lot of times they're seeking treatment for eating disorders and getting the diagnosis of autism through their treatment programs. Not always, but sometimes. But there is a lot of overlap. But what a lot of the research that I am seeing coming out of the eating disorder and autism field is that the approach is a little bit different. And the reasoning behind the development of the eating disorder in a person with autism is slightly different. Because a lot of times these individuals develop very rigid rituals around food and they develop these unhealthy eating strategies out of a attempt to self-regulate. So they might be excessive exercisers at an attempt to self-regulate, or they limit their food intake very drastically in an effort to self-regulate, or they vomit frequently in an order to self-regulate. So I think the underlying mechanisms are a little bit different, but the prevalence is high, and it's something that we really need to talk about.
Yeah, I think I read in an article somewhere, one of the other things is that when you are in a an eating disordered state, everything in your body gets more silent. You stop having periods, so you're not cramping. You stop sensing things. I mean, anyone who's ever skipped a meal knows that they just get a little numb in the head, you know? And I could see where that could be a very seductive place that people might want to land. So I'm really glad that more focus on the overlap is happening. You know, it's very interesting about the rigidity. Someone just recently brought that to my attention. This has been an ongoing challenge in our household. I have a son who's 29, and he eats about 8 foods. And many, many years we didn't argue because we were more worried about creating a health challenge in regard to an eating disorder. And then he went away to college and we wanted him to be able to focus on his academics. But now that he's finished, I really would like to address this. And in his case, he also doesn't have any sense of taste or smell. And so texture and the due dates, the expiration dates, if you will, on the cans are the only things that keep him safe. And, you know, from where his body interceptively tells him what's good and what's not. So I think it's good that we're looking at this as not one single problem, but this very complex layering of issues, right? Some are medical, some are mental health, some are developmental, some are sensory. And, you know, teasing that out may not always be possible. Would you think so?
I think it is very complex, but we need to give it our best shot to try to tease out because it's so different for each person. And mm-hmm. if we can really get to the root cause, it will help us to provide better supports.
Can you help us understand, help the audience understand more about interoception as it intersects with food and eating issues?
Sure. Well, just a really quick recap interoception on what is interoception. It is a sense, just like our sense of sight or a sense of sound. And it's our, it just has a slightly different purpose. And it allows us, interoception allows us to feel the inside of our bodies. So if you feel your heart start to race or your stomach start to growl or your muscles start to tense, many people can feel those sensations because of interoception. So the way that interoception relates to the topic that we're talking about today with eating and food, interoception serves as our motivation to eat. So what I mean by that is we start to notice, many people start to notice feelings within their body when they become hungry, like a growling stomach or maybe a light light feeling in their head or maybe sluggish muscles. And that is their cue or their motivation to say, hey, I'm hungry. I need to get food. And for some people with autism, interoception can be a very challenging sense. And for some, they completely miss their internal cues, their interoceptive signals saying, hey, I'm hungry. I have some clients that miss these cues altogether, and they could go for 2 days without eating. And not feel hungry. Or I have some other clients that they only notice the way their body feels when it's very intense. So they don't notice that they're hungry until they are really what some of my team clients call hangry, where they're just overly hungry and very irritable at the same time. So interoception is very closely related to feeling hungry and motivating us to eat. And also, I have quite a few clients that I support that they also don't notice the signals in their body telling them when they've had enough to eat. And so overeating can be a really big problem for some of my clients because interoception provides many people with kind of an off switch of like their body feels a certain way when they've had enough to eat and then they stop eating. But for some of my clients, they don't recognize those signals.
I think for me, that's probably where I fit in the whole picture and why I think this particular topic is so important to me, because I don't hear those signals. And especially if I'm doing something that's requiring a lot of my attention or I'm in a meeting and I'm needing to focus on things that are not so don't come so easily to me, I definitely stop hearing those little voices from my body and getting those messages. And I definitely don't get them in time. I'm one of the hangry people. That's definitely what happens to me. But I've kind of gone about this journey trying to figure out how I can deal with my food issues. So what are some of the OT secrets that you guys use for helping people with their food issues that maybe some of our listeners can try at home?
That's a great question. And again, it really depends on the root cause, and it's so different for each individual. Like, where is the difficulty with eating and feeding? Where is that stemming from? So if it's coming from interoception, some things that can be really helpful, and I know, Becca, you had shared previously that mindfulness meditation can be really helpful, and that's because mindfulness teaches us to pay attention to the way our body feels. So there's something called body scan scripts. You can Google that. There's a lot of free ones available. You can play around until you find one that you really like. And they're just a script that guides you through paying attention to the way your body feels in a sequential way. That can be very helpful. And Becca, like you said too, when it's time to eat, to be really mindful, if you're someone that tends to overeat, that we really need to just be paying attention to the task at hand, to the eating, they call it mindful eating, and just being aware of the way our body feels with each bite, and stopping at a point where we start to feel the full signals. If the feeding difficulties are stemming from something other than interoception, a lot of the things that I suggest to my clients, taking a few minutes before it is time to eat, to do something that is relaxing, to just prepare your body to be nice and calm during the meal is very helpful. If you go into mealtime in a state of anxiety or fight or flight, your body is not really open to being able to eat, especially when you're trying foods that might not be 100% your favorite. So taking 5 minutes to de-stress, whether that's doing something deep pressure or maybe you do some deep breathing, whatever it is that's relaxing for you. Also, we have a lot of success trying to increase the predictability around mealtime. So trying to eat at the same times every day, eating in the same places every day. I have two clients that they eat with the same plate every day. That predictability, again, helps to decrease anxiety at mealtime and opens them up to being able to eat a greater amount of food, or a greater amount of types of food, if you will. And then the last thing is really looking at the environment where you're eating, and looking especially at the sensory environment, and trying to dampen any sensory input or sensory things in the environment that could cause anxiety or sensory overwhelm. Because again, we're trying to make mealtime a calm and feel good time of day.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. When my son is sick, if you ask him where he hurts, he has no response. He just, his interoception cues are so unplugged that it's very hard to for him to get inside himself. And we've thought about just re-engaging just sensory work altogether for him to try to ignite something there to make those connections happen again. I know for me, I never have a problem with eating, as you can probably tell if you've ever seen a picture of me. I'm still using a headshot from 10 years ago because I've gained so much weight in my graduate program. But what I have found to be helpful to me, but I wonder about the nutritional implications, is I tend to make like a big vat of something, like, you know, fresh chicken salad with roasted chicken or a pot of chili. And I eat the same thing every day so that I don't have to do the executive function piece of meal planning. I can put together a phenomenal dinner party, but, you know, the everyday grind of Monday night is meatloaf just destroys me. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about executive function and planning and how that affects this?
Sure. Just as you said, especially as an adult, feeding yourself is incredibly complex and requires a lot of executive functioning skills, because you have to not only think ahead of time about what you're going to eat in a day and making sure that you have access to food, and if you don't have access to food, what do you need to do about it to get access to food, whether it's planning a grocery list or getting yourself to the store or managing your time to fit in a trip to the grocery store. I have a few clients that by the time they notice that they're hungry, they realize that there's no food in their apartment or in their house. And then it's like a frantic scramble to figure out, what am I going to do in order to feed myself tonight for dinner? So really just that planning ahead is really important. And I think your suggestion for making, Dina, your suggestion for making big amounts of food at one time is a really great strategy to kind of compensate for executive functioning difficulties, because then you're setting yourself up to have meal options for a few days. And I think that's a really great idea.
Yeah, so we're sort of moving into the segment, which is awesome, because that's the hope, is that we can continue this conversation in the next segment with sort of a roundtable discussion for you guys about what are some of the tips and tools that we've heard use that we think work, the ones that we've tried ourselves, and some of those things that we can talk about. But before we do that, I just want to give Kelly an opportunity to just go ahead and let everyone know where they can find you, where they can get the book on interception, all of that fun stuff.
Well, you can find me at my website. It's www.mahler-autism.com. And you spell Mahler, M-A-H-L-E-R. So it's mahler-autism.com. And you can send me an email through that website. And my book, my links to my books are on that website as well. And then we also have a very active Facebook group. If you're interested in learning more about interoception, you can just Google, or I'm sorry, not Google. When you get on Facebook, search interoception, the eighth sensory system, and you can find us there.
Let's move on to some tips that we can talk about, some tools, because I'm all about what can we do about it to make it better. I think many of us on the spectrum that are adults are already at a loss for supports. So what can we do that's affordable, that's functional, that kind of helps along those lines of what you were talking about, Dina, in terms of, you know, cooking large amounts and that kind of thing. I'm somebody myself, I don't cook. I really struggle in the kitchen. Some of it is that I was never really taught. And as we know, that's not how our brains learn. So you can read, I can read cookbooks, but that doesn't help me. But the other piece is that I have some coordination issues. And so my fine motor is really kind of keeps me out of the kitchen a lot. It gets kind of dangerous for me in there sometimes. So one of the things that I had to deal with was meal planning without using the kitchen. So talking about pre-prepared meals and things like that, which can get sticky when you're really picky about the foods that you eat. So the older I got, the more limited my diet got in its own kind of weird way. I just, I'm kind of set in my ways, and I'm okay with the small amounts of foods that I eat. But it took me a while to get there with my brain, to let my brain say, it's okay that these are the foods that you eat. So I think really for me, skipping ahead of trying to stop pushing myself through trying to actually cook for myself and saying that's just, it's eating too many spoons out of my day, and kind of thinking about how can I eat healthy in a pre-prepared way for myself. And that was kind of how I was living till I got married. So now I have Antonio and he cooks everything.
That's kind of what we wound up doing, Becca, with my son is, you know, he would go to the school cafeteria every day for his meal plan, and they would make him a peanut butter sandwich with no jelly. And they even cut the crust off for him, which I thought was above and beyond. And he would have an applesauce, and that was his fruit for the week. I did have a nutritionist very early on with these issues tell me that the food pyramid for us should be conceptualized as a weekly objective and not a daily one. And that gave me so much relief as a mom. And it's kind of given me, I think you're right. I think we get so anxious comparing what we do to other people that adds to the complexity of things, you know? And so just hearing someone give me permission to say unsweetened applesauce three times a week is a fruit and it's okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he learned how to prepare a couple of meals, and we modified them to make them a little healthier. So, you know, like he eats Kraft macaroni and cheese out of the box, a certain shape, you know, a certain brand, but he uses olive oil and skim milk instead of using the higher fat options for that. You know, he does like kids cereal, but he eats whole grain kids cereal. So, you know, we've done what we could with what he was comfortable eating. But now I think it's time to start poking the dummy a little bit, you know, to try to just try things that are familiar, but not extremely different from what he's already eating, you know?
Yeah. I think I used to, one of the things that I talk about is getting comfortable with your comfort foods, right? Because there are times in my life where I am so low on spoons for all of the other reasons in my life than having to meal plan, right? But I know if I go and get something brand new to eat that I've never really eaten before from someplace I've never eaten on that day, I'm probably going to struggle with that food. And so on those days, it's like I make the choice to stick with my safe foods, the foods that I know that I don't necessarily struggle with are the ones that I can rely on. And it's the whole chicken nugget philosophy, I think. So many of us in the spectrum, I feel like, rely on our chicken nuggets because they're just pretty much the same everywhere. And so, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, how you're making your choices about your spoons, you know, like, yeah, you know, would I love to be eating, you know, a perfectly balanced salad every day? Yeah, but I can't get it down my body. So on the days that I can't, I try to remember to be kind to myself, because I can do better the next day.
Said about the hangry thing, I remember I had a client who was a young adult, and he was losing weight like crazy at college because everything was under construction, and his college mascot was called the Hilltoppers because the college was on a hill. I mean, like one of my friends was an alum, and she used to have a little like moped mini bike because it was so difficult to navigate. And we had not considered that in any way. And he stopped going to get food because it was just too tiring. And I had another client who would not know to eat until he was hangry, and then he would just go to junk food because it was faster.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, would you suggest, like, for that kind of situation, or in Becca's situation where her body doesn't talk to her, like maybe a schedule model or an alarm model? What would you suggest?
Yeah, we use both, especially for teens and adults. Smartphones, those built-in timers are great. And so we use them to set the timer to go off at meal times and snack times, just to remind someone to eat, so that they don't get to the place where they're hangry and then reaching for junk food in a scramble to eat. And for some of the younger clients or those who prefer not using their smartphone device, just getting in a predictable pattern, a predictable schedule of when you eat on a daily basis can be very helpful, because then you're not relying on your body's signals to let you know when it's time to eat.
Mm-hmm. And then how would you address the opposite scenario? Like, I have a guy that has to eat macaroni and cheese on Friday because it's Friday, right? Like, we stretch him all the time and say, well, let's do that tomorrow night. Tonight we're going to go out, you know? But you can see that it's stressing him to change the schedule. What would you consider there?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. And I don't ever have the right answer to those questions, because in my mind, I just think that, and like Becca said, to just allow him to be kind to himself and accept that on Fridays, it makes me feel good to have macaroni and cheese. And that's the way that I am. And that's what I like. And is that okay to acknowledge that and support that? I guess then on the other hand, if it's getting in the way of him being able to do something like join friends or family out at a restaurant, I guess that becomes a different story. And is there a way that we can compromise? Can he eat macaroni and cheese before he goes out to the restaurant? And then he just goes out to the restaurant to hang out with his friends and family.
You make me feel so good, because that's exactly what we do. Yay, I'm doing something.
Yay. Right. I mean, I think that's part of, you know, there's a stigma with either having your routine about food or just having being what is conceived as picky or just having your preferences and being strong about them. And I feel like sometimes we get slack for that. And it's like, really, is it so bad that I like to have an English muffin every morning from now until I'm 75? Is that the worst thing ever? You know? And so I would love that part of the conversation to change a little bit more. You know, what are, you know, understanding when we've entered into a realm of unhealthy in terms of mental health or physical health, and knowing that that's sort of the limit to put on these things, unless it's upsetting you. You know, is it distressing you to be a Friday night mac and cheese person? You know, and if it's not, you know, move on to something that is upsetting you, I say.
Yeah, I'm good with the schedule. I just like to see some fruits and vegetables going in that body, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we also supplement with chewable vitamins and fiber tablets. You know, we're doing what we can. But I think that sometimes we have to, all of us have to push ourselves just a little to be a little healthier. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to work on it just at his pace.
Yeah. Love it. Well, thank you, ladies, very much for having this conversation with us and for our listeners, because I think it's one of the topics we don't get to really get into detail about. So I appreciate it. Once again, you guys, if you're looking for Kelly and Interoception, you can find her at Mahler, M-A-H-L-E-R, autism.com. And if you're looking for Dina, you can find her at the Center for Understanding. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today. Make sure and check out Different Brains at differentbrains.org and check out their Twitter at DiffBrains, as well as looking for them on Facebook. If you're looking for me, you can find me at www.beccalaurie.com, or you can look for me at the Center for Neurodiversity or on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. And if you want to find Mr. Walter, Sir Walter Underfoot is on Instagram, so go ahead and check him out. And Dina, you can be found at?
Center for Understanding is my Facebook page, and the email is understanding@gmail.com. I'm also available on LinkedIn. Thank you, everybody.
Yes, thank you. Make sure you subscribe and rate us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Don't hesitate to send your questions to spectrumlyspeaking@gmail.com. Because as you can see, we take your suggestions. And let's keep the conversation going.
Spectrumly Speaking is a production of Different Brains. For more information, visit us at differentbrains.org.